Hello everyone and welcome to today's Charter Digital podcast. We're very delighted to welcome you for another episode. As always, we're seeing more of you tuning in every other Tuesday, so thank you. Don't hesitate to follow us on social media, LinkedIn and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at charitydg.charitydg.org. And now on to our topic for today, which is extremely relevant to what we do every day at Charity Digital, and especially this year as we are writing loads more on climate action. Can tech save the planet? Tech has always been a paradox in the history of climate change, as both a problem and a solution. Tech is one of the main drivers of greenhouse gas emission and pushes us further into the climate crisis. On the other hand, tech has also helped us limit our emissions and help us deal with the various impacts of the climate crisis. So we need to ensure that now and in the future, we use the right tech in the right way, reject catch-all and one-stop solutions, and consider how tech can inform meaningful climate action. Our conversation today will cover our behaviours, the importance of green tech, and so much more. And I'm really looking forward to speaking today with our fabulous content team, Georgie Sparling, Laura Stanley, and Johan Mark Jones, to discuss whether tech can save the planet. My name is Lisa, and looking forward to spending the next half hour with you. Hello.
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 Brilliant. As many of you know, we've been producing a lot of content around tech and climate change and how charities can act in all this and all this ecosystem. Obviously, a lot has been written about some of the more negative impact of tech on the environment, including heavy consumption, power consumption, or reliance on rare materials, which can, make a lot of environment unstable. So my first question would be, is tech to blame for climate change? And I think, Johan, you would like to start on that.
The answer is yes.
That was a very quick answer.
I mean, it's weird because you have to take into consideration the benefits from the Industrial Revolution and generally progress in terms of the industrial and non-industrial spheres. I think the benefits are obviously a wider distribution of wealth, international trade, rising class consciousness and progressive social movements across the world. These are all really good things, but there's massive downsides, and probably the biggest downside to the Industrial Revolution. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but one of the downsides is climate change. And there's like reports that directly corroborate that fact, that as we've seen time progress, the Industrial Revolution arrives and we've seen greenhouse gas emissions grow. It's kind of hard to deny the link between the two. And I mean, it's denialism to deny that link. And I think it's obvious as well in the way that if you judge what happened during the Industrial Revolution, the rise of transportation industries, the steam train, automobile, airplane, all of which we know are massive contributors to climate change. Perhaps historically, actually, we've over-exaggerated the contribution from those industries, but we still know that they are very, very big contributors. And then the use of new basic materials like iron and steel, obviously in manufacturing and construction, but as well as like everyday usage of energy resources and the new machines that were created. And that's from going back to what we see as the Industrial Revolution right to today. You've just seen a continuous growth in tech. I think the notion of tech, when we're talking about tech now, we're talking about technological advancements. Mm-hmm. So that includes a steam train, not an Apple Watch. Although it does also include an Apple Watch. And so more and more tech is being produced, and that depends on more energy. And we know that we live in a sort of finite planet of finite energy resources, and we can't grow it exponentially, infinitely, because that's going to cause problems. There's just logical problems there. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a contributor, a massive contributor, and is to blame for climate change. Ultimately, if we didn't have the Industrial Revolution and we didn't have that continuing, dependence on tech and technological production and increasingly energy resources, then we wouldn't be in this situation today, unfortunately. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
I mean, because it obviously yielded huge boost to living standards and everything else, but it's certainly something we kind of skirt over a lot of the time when we have these conversations. And I think one of the things I dislike is that nature of the lack of nuance around like tech is good, or there's mm-hmm. inherent good to tech. Well, of course, there's a lot of inherent good within tech, but I think a lot of the productions have had these massive downsides. So yeah, it's to blame.
So yes, it is to blame for Johan. Josie, do you have
Yeah, I agree. But I would say that tech isn't solely to blame. And also it's more about the processes, like, as Johan said, like how it's produced, used, and then disposed of, much like anything else, like maybe the fashion industry or any producing anything. It's all about the, that process rather than the thing itself. Yeah, and also maybe something that's interesting or worth mentioning with tech is the idea of like progress and, as you say, like develop, like what we, how things are developed and whether it's always the best idea to keep producing new things and more things. And we just maybe consider that as like a default good thing, but it may not be in the context of climate change.
No, definitely. And Laura, do you?
I think both Johan and Josie have said everything that I would agree with. Yeah, I think it's really a really interesting point about, you know, whether we keep producing and progress and things like that. I think to be a defender of tech, but it's just sort of, it is to blame in the way that, as Josie said, everything is sort of to blame. There's ice core. Like, people have looked at ice cores from Greenland and seen what the carbon dioxide makeup of the atmosphere was then, and it's beyond, it's fact that in the industrialization has caused what an expansive amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that's what's contributed to climate change. So yeah, I think it's to blame as much as everything, but I do think that digital, you know, it's become a part of life now. I think the problem with digital or tech generally is just that we, as Johan said, we don't think about it. Mm-hmm. So when we have things in the cloud, we don't think about the fact that the cloud has an environmental footprint, or that because we just don't think about those servers that exist in deserts or whatever, we don't think about them. And so I think it's more, I think our sort of acceptance of tech, a blind acceptance of tech, is more to blame for climate change. That's what I would say. And that goes back to Josie's point of like progress for progress sake sometimes.
I think I'd add, just to agree with Josie and Laura there, because now I feel bad by just saying it is about human action, obviously. And I think, you know, Josie's point about using more and more for the sake of it. The fashion industry is a really good comparison.
It's a really good example. Yes. You know, yeah, fast fashion. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, so it's about human action. And that's, I'm sure, what we'll come to. I'm just trying not to jump ahead to the next question. yeah, I think the action, we're so unaware of, and this isn't just tech, I think there's other things to blame, but we seemingly, with climate change, we're so unaware of impacts and so used to the way things are, and we almost take them for granted.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. No, that's very true. And actually, as you were leading, the next question is, you know, we had a look at maybe the negative impact, but there are also loads of positives to using tech to tackle climate change. And there are a lot of ways maybe we can do that. Maybe Laura, you want to share a couple of examples?
I think, sorry, I just panicked. Yeah, so I think for me, it's important to start small with using tech to tackle climate change, like carbon capture and all the really big stuff is obviously really important, but probably less relevant to our audience listening today. So I just think it's like little changes. So I've got some stats I can read out to you. So the transportation sector is responsible for 30% of global emissions. So it's about asking, can that meeting be a Zoom call? And obviously Zoom calls can, like, that's, Zoom is exploded since the pandemic. We all know how to use a Zoom call, but video conferencing emits between 150 and 1,000 grams of carbon dioxide, which in a gallon of gasoline used in a car emits about 8,887 grams. So I think you can see how it would save energy in that way. And also, if you turn off your video, it saves energy by 96%. So all that energy used in a Zoom call is mostly your video.
All right. Yes, because I was going to say, you know, do you use less if you use a Zoom instead of commuting, taking public transport to a meeting?
Exactly. So if you, yeah, that's exactly that. So it's, everything has its emission, but it's just about like sort of weighing it up.
Turn your cameras off.
Especially if you're in like a big org-wide meeting where it's not necessary. No one's looking at your face anyway. so it's ideal. The energy needed for an hour video call uses up to 3 gallons of water. So, yeah. I'm probably saying that tech isn't saving the planet there, but it can do, weighed up against things that we're traditionally using. Have I gone off the brain?
No. I just had this image of people downing water during meeting.
During downing 3 gallons. And yeah. Like, you won't see me on cameras, but I'm having...
Oh, my God. I think you're just laughing at my point. Yes, and also, like, just... So even stuff like Netflix, right? The big videos have a really big carbon footprint, but watching on standard definition instead of high definition can lead to an 86% reduction in energy. So I think for me, tech can say, like, we need tech. The 2022 nonprofit trends report from Salesforce.org found that digitally mature organizations were more likely to achieve their mission goals, like 4 times more likely to achieve their mission goals. So, you know, we're charity digital. We know that charities need digital. We advocate for them using it because it can help them achieve their mission, save time, have a healthier workplace culture. But I think it's about using it strategically and thinking about the little way, like genuinely what I said in the first question, thinking about where you're using tech. And that's how it can save the planet generally.
Yeah.
Because there are ways to use it and still be green.
Yes, absolutely. Or using tech to reduce your impact on climate change, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking about a few examples. If you're using a lot of, especially for your data, if you're using a lot of data mapping technology, if you're a conservation charity, then it means that if you have to send rangers on cars to attend or to, you know, look at conservation, you're better able to make the most of their time and avoid them spending too much or wasting too long in traveling if you know exactly where to go. There's also the same example for maybe a food bank, and if they know how many people are going to be present each week, then it can enable them to reduce food waste, as we know that food waste contributes to a lot of carbon dioxide emissions. Yeah. And ultimately, we don't want food waste because a lot of people around the world are going through hunger. So the use of tech and maybe data in that sort of thing can be useful to tackle climate change. Yeah. I don't know if Josie, you wanted to add to that.
I think in terms of as an individual, I think you have a certain amount of power to use tech to tackle climate change. I think social media is a good example. I mean, there are influencers that use social media to raise awareness and educate people about climate change. And there's obviously a lot of ways that the internet and all of this can make people... give people power to collect and arrange in-person events and petitions and things like that. But I think the key is to making sure that it doesn't stay online and that it goes offline as well.
Definitely.
That's such a good point.
I agree with both Laura and Josie and the things they're saying. I think I could touch a little bit on the higher tech side of things because I think that's worth mentioning, even though it might not be as sort of practical thing you could take away from this, but I think it's worth differentiating higher tech into sort of 3 core groups. And one is like everyday products that you can use. A lot of these are kind of free or cheap, like smart meters, for example. And other things actually cost a little more money, but often kind of justify themselves in terms of cost. It's always easy if you don't have a ton of money to get these things. So it's something obviously that we're aware of. But the second thing is like the more sort of kind of project-based high green tech, which is stuff like green architecture and like cool things that seem almost futuristic, like vertical farming, which is not like cows in the sky. It's all like and then
tomatoes.
Self-sufficient buildings as well seems quite high tech. But these are things that actually do typically reduce costs or can typically reduce costs. And obviously it's a trajectory. They're not quite there where they want to be. And the final things worth, so a lot of those are about saving emissions. And then the final group that you mentioned is the sort of really futuristic stuff, but the stuff that is already kind of happening in some ways, but hasn't probably been as effective as people hoped. And that's stuff like carbon capture, which Laura briefly touched on. I mean, I think
she mentioned
because she didn't want to talk about, but that actually takes carbon out of the atmosphere. I remember reading about carbon capture like 10 years ago and everyone saying, this is it, you know, we've solved climate change. And there was such hope around it. And the truth is that it's relatively minimal mm-hmm. terms of what it's doing. The potential is huge, but at the same
time, be expensive.
It's very expensive, mm-hmm. and the amount they'd have to pay. Mm-hmm. Simply put, so stuff like those other things I should mention, like smart city infrastructure. Again, a lot of things we're talking about is in the press recently about smart cities and wave energy management. These are really big things that as a lot of hopes are pinned to, but I think the key to remember is that they will not save the world. And I think that that is kind of the takeaway that I've always had, is that too much emphasis is put on this tech, too much trust. And it kind of annoys me, because it's like, well, actually, to solve climate change, to become an environmentalist and to protect our planet, we need to change the way we mm-hmm. consume and the way we behave. Mm-hmm. Instead, we sort of sit on our laurels a lot of the time, don't take action, and just trust this very abstract theory and tech that actually has proved that it's not as effective as it says it's going to be, or that people hope. And I think a lot of that is willful ignorance, to mm-hmm. be honest, people preferring to trust in a high tech, trust in science, or, you know, technological production or technological advancement, rather than accept the quite clear and brutal fact that we are destroying the planet and that the results are going to be quite catastrophic. And the only way to actually change that is to take human action, us to change the way we consume and to change the way we act.
That leads us quite nicely to our attitudes and behaviors around using tech. Like, what can we, you know, thinking about our listeners and us on a daily basis, like, what can we do to have maybe a more responsible use of tech? I don't know if Laura, you had some ideas already, or
I think a lot of it is about education and just like being cognizant of everything of digital's impact. I sort of think about it as in terms of, do you know, like when you look for a makeup dupe and it's like, because you can't afford the high end stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you look for the sort of cheaper alternative. Yes. It's looking for the greener alternative of everything you use. Because there are them out there. And it's also like, even it, like, so add the environment into all your procurement strategies. Add it to your environmental policy and then you'll consider it. But it also puts pressure on the people giving you the tech to have a good environmental policy, to show how they're impacted, and to give you environmental tips as well, if they have them, like turning off your camera, who knew. But I think that the biggest thing of driving behavior change is genuinely just being aware of that the digital does have an impact on the environment, really. Because I think about it a lot more now, having with our climate action campaign and
being researched around it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I'm definitely going to be annoying in meetings and have my camera on now. Like, because I just didn't know that. But and it's also, we found out a stat a while ago, and I have not stopped telling everyone in the office about it. But if you send one less email a day, if everyone in the UK sent one less email a day, it would save a ridiculous amount of carbon dioxide. Yes. And I just thought that was fascinating.
It's an easy way for Laura to get out of work, I think.
Excuse me. It's an easy way for me to be rude and just not send a thank you. I did think about putting it in our, like, we've got our little climate email signature, but I did think about putting in your signature to remind other people, but also so they won't be like, she's a bit rude. She's not replied. But actually, do you really need that extra email? But it's like thinking about it as much as anything else, because that's what's going to drive the change.
And also loads of unread emails in clogging inboxes.
Yes. Delete them.
It does take up a lot of cloud storage, which ultimately leads to a lot of consumption. I don't have the exact data, but I know that this is something that, joining what you were saying about sending, one less email a day, that could already make a lot of difference. So if you can clear up your inbox, that could be a good start. Johan, did you have other?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say like changing user behavior is probably like two approaches. I think the first is pretty much what Laura's saying. Like, you could take the economic ideas of like Homo economicus. It's the idea that economists use when modeling that all human actors are, you pictured like Keynes.
Immediately Vogue. Yeah.
No, but like, it's the idea that, sorry for Laura's interruption, everyone. But it's the idea of, in economic modeling, you take actors and you presume that they will make rational decisions that increase their monetary or non-monetary value, or basically make rational decisions of self-interest, going back to sort of Adam Smith and stuff like that. And I think the interesting thing about that is you want that people increasingly want to. I mean, a report from Business Wire said that a third of consumers are happily to pay more for sustainable products, and so on and so forth. So there is actually a rational decision making that people would actually opt for sustainable things, and you could have modelling around that. And the interesting thing that I'm getting to the long way around seems that, like, you just need the transparent information in almost everything, which we actually don't have right now, and that's a massive failure from governments across the world. And so that's the soft approach, to give people information and let them make the decisions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think obviously that's a pretty core thing, and we're not doing it. We're not doing it right in ways like, for example, the rise in greenwashing. People are getting the wrong statistic or manipulative statistics, which allow them to make ill-informed decisions, and thus they can't do the best by the environment. And then there's cherry picking. And it really emphasizes the fact that businesses and charities particularly need to be honest about what they're doing and what their products cost in terms of environmental damage and anything else as well. Transparent information is essential. And then the second approach is a stricter or harder approach, which is and equally necessary, and that's that governments, and particularly not national governments, international governments, need to get together and legislate to create incentives and disincentives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward stuff. Like, I mean, we don't really have it in any kind of serious sense. All the climate legislation is either just ignored. So not all of it, of course, but so much of it is ignored. I mean, there's stuff like the Paris Agreement, and the fact that countries just are not going to meet that. And they're just going along going, we're not going to meet it. You know, and it's kind of like, well, that there's clearly not enough pressure on these countries, and the international governance isn't strong enough or stringent enough. And so they need to make changes in that sense, really. And I think a lot of that comes down to taxes, tax people for climate damage. And, you know, we talk about externalities in economics a lot of the time, and that's like basically the fact that they're almost, it's like damage that people don't see. So, for example, BP don't pay for the environmental damage they've done. They never have, or, you know, they haven't historically. And that is a damage that other people pay for. That might be, you know, environmental damage.
Yes,
I mean, the fact we breathe terrible air where we live. No one paid for that, but they reap rewards from it. You know, they make huge profits, but they never had to pay. And now when we breathe, it's not as good air. It's a very weird way of looking at economics. But in real terms, if you have a good society, a financially a fair society, they would be paying taxes for my breathing. And I think they should. I mean, they should give me direct. No, but I mean, these things, that's an essential. Taxing externalities has often come up in this debate, and there has been examples of it, but it's nowhere near what it should be. If people are going to damage the planet for some good or some seen good, such as, you know, transport, we all enjoy transport, then they should pay externalities. That might come back to the consumer, but that's a fairer way of doing it. It's an economy that works on the basis of wholesale knowledge and fairness, and that's currently what we're lacking, I think. Sorry, that was a really
I think it's also very complex because obviously all of us are now, you know, discussing in London, and as many of our listeners will be aware of, there's talks to expand, for instance, the ultra low emission zone to certain parts or certain borough of London. And there's a lot of people for and against it. I think what makes it more complex is that when, you know, it comes from a government, which I think is really important to have that incentive, and which essentially means taxing more polluting vehicles, is also important to provide the alternative to people who maybe cannot afford to change vehicles, or, you know, go to choose a hybrid vehicle instead of a diesel, for instance. And that adds obviously a level of complexity that you know, we're not sure whether we're tackling really well at the moment. Obviously the sort of London ULEZ is an example, but there's quite a lot of other cases where you're seeing a lot of government intervention, which is really good, because, like you said, air, for instance, is very polluted, and thousands of people die of air pollution every year. At the same time, loads of people are using their vehicles in order to to go to school, to go to work, and might not be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. So I think, which is why it's very important for people to be educated, to look at a very reliable source of information and make an educated choice when it comes to obviously public transport or, you know, food waste, etc. Mm-hmm. And that might be, you know, obviously some of us who have listened to our previous podcast have been listening to the podcast we've done around communications and getting educated around climate change. And I think that's a very important thing to help change behaviours of people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Josie, you wanted to add to these attitudes and behaviours.
Yeah, so I agree with everything that's been said. I think with just the average person, remembering that the technology we use is physical and like has physical processes that go on like throughout its life cycle, mm-hmm. and it's not just like magic. Because yeah. I think to receive or to buy a piece of technology, you kind of forget what's happened beforehand. Mm. When you're mm-hmm. using it, it's all kind of, you're using your mind rather than, you know, so just remember that it does have physical consequences or impacts, whatever you're doing. And then the other part of it as well is focusing on people who are responsible for producing technology. And I think that's probably like a policy issue, but there's like quite a lot of, I don't know, that's another debate, I guess, like, because also the consumer might have a voice in that. But I think, so things like planned obsolescence, which is when technology mm-hmm. is made with the plan for it to be broken so that the consumer then has to buy mm-hmm. another one. That kind of thing could, you know, should change. And mm-hmm. I think, that comes down to the people making the technology rather than just your average person.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And obviously we're all using laptops and phones. There's a lot of uptake.
Battery replaced.
And actually, as I know you are, Johan, but you're using sometimes refurbished phones. Yeah. And that's something that is really just increasing.
Did I hear some stats about that?
One
sec, just to say the refurbished phones is a good example though, because that is planned up. Is it planned obsolescence?
I love that, by the way. I now have a word for it.
That's actually refurbished as an example mm-hmm. of that, because I don't want to buy a refurbished phone. I just don't want to spend £1,000 on a new phone. But they just keep breaking slowly, and I don't want any new tech. Like, I don't personally want. What do they have these days? Better cameras.
They're just too big as well.
So I like the old iPhones, for example, and that's what I want to keep using. So I just get refurbs. But it's not. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I never really thought about it like that.
Because we don't think about them in terms of being in landfill, and they're actually, e-waste is really bad for the environment. They're like basically smoking in landfill. It's not good.
Exactly. Or buried.
Yeah. A bit of my stat. Look, everyone's been waiting for while you were waffling on.
A jingle. A jingle for the stat.
I can't be like the Susie Dent. I'm not going to become the Susie Dent of this podcast. So opting to buy a refurbished device could save an average of 55.5 kilograms of carbon dioxide and 100 litres of water, according to a report from Green Gadget.
This is, really interesting.
Opting to buy a refurbished device,
100 litres. The water thing always gets me.
Yes.
With like, you know, everyone, again, we should mention diets and stuff, plant-based diets, obviously are very popular because they are a good way of addressing climate change. But the thing that always got me was like, I don't know the stats, Laura, but how much like a cow compared to a chicken costs in water? You know, that was the thing. To eat a hamburger versus eating like a plain bit of chicken, the difference in the amount of water consumption between those two things. I mean, that's when we're going back to stuff that we've never been told, we never knew until these things start coming out. And it's about cognizance again.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at everything I see and go, how much water did that cost? But someone should do
that. Absolutely.
Yeah. We should know the environmental cost. And that way, I mean, we know the cost of so many other elements that we find important. Mm-hmm. In food, for example, we know that nutritional costs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's reasons for all these things and reasons against them as well. But we should have climate costs.
It just comes down to being, if you're aware of it, like there's some things you're going to have to be able to do, right? Sometimes you're going to have a meeting in person. Sometimes you're going to have to
or come to a conference in person.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of.
But there were other things that we could do for that conference. So we had tote bags the year before, which we gave away to a charity instead of giving it to landfill. And we didn't have tote bags this year, and we didn't have any personal flyers. Mm. We had an app. Less programs and mm-hmm. things like that. So there are different it's a cost benefit analysis thing, isn't it? But for the environment instead of it's a green benefit analysis. How does it all weigh up? And so, yeah, there's going to be some things you need to do, but if you're aware of the cost of things, you can think, oh, do I actually need to do that? And mm-hmm. it's using it strategically and not wastefully. It's like any element of energy saving, isn't it? Be efficient.
Absolutely.
I'm doing a lot of gestures.
Alice is at home, Laura's currently dancing. We are looking at her, I'm wondering why she's dancing.
I got nervous. Delivered in musical form.
No, but thank you. Thank you all for all of these nice tips and ideas on how to change behaviours and attitudes. And you know, as a last question is, do you have a couple of actions or actionable tips that charity professionals could do, whether they're volunteers or whether they are, you know, directors or heading a department? Maybe, Laura, you have a few things too.
This is a hard. I have some practical tips, mm-hmm. but I also think it's important that some high level ones. So adding the environment to having an actual environmental policy is mm-hmm. really important. Yeah. But
to
also
refer back to. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good examples of ones online where you can see that they've gone through every element of their operations from transport for services and stuff like that. And I think that's really helpful because, again, it helps you refer back to it and also helps you weigh up where you're using things maybe wastefully or without a purpose. But I also think making sure that environmental policy is not separate. So it should be on everything. Mm-hmm. It was what we were saying about adding it to your procurement. Why could I not say that word? And just making sure that it's always part of the conversation. Yeah. So when boards mm-hmm. have a question, even about cybersecurity, is this energy efficient? Is this is this the greenest bank account we can use? Mm-hmm. Is this the greenest pension we have? Always
investment,
making sure that is it green?
Exactly.
So I think that's the biggest sort of tip I could give, or a practical thing I would say is just make sure it's in there. Mm-hmm. But there's also little things like choosing JPEGs over PNGs because it makes pages load faster, which is also really good for your SEO, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I looked at our SEO expert to confirm, so yes. There's also HTML publishing over PDFs because PDFs take a really long time to load as well. So that saves a lot. And also, mm-hmm. I think you mentioned this earlier, cleaning your data and cleaning your emails mm-hmm. and reduce the amount of server space. And that's just good anyway. You shouldn't be collecting data you don't need. But because that makes your data, it makes it less useful. Mm-hmm. So clean it and then get rid of that server space. And you're also being green. It's amazing.
Yeah, so definitely. Josie, do you have all the...
I have a few that haven't been mentioned yet. So going paperless is one example. Mm-hmm. Raising awareness inside the organisation about best practice, so including unplugging devices once charged and switching off lights. Only purchasing IT equipment with a high energy efficiency rating or buying refurbished tech.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reusing tech internally and recycling tech once it's stopped working. And that's it.
Yeah. Definitely. And how about you, Johan?
Yeah, I'll just say one. I think they've covered most of that. But the only one, the audit. I think a lot of what we talked about today has been basically saying, a lot of what we're saying is be very aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of
the impact.
So audit your charity. Because I think a lot of the things we've said today may actually have a lot of the solutions, not these ones, but earlier we sort of said, why not have an app instead of that? I don't even know. If I'm being honest, I was thinking, is an app bad? And so I guess a tech audit will give you that wide-ranging overview of where your damage is centered and allow you to make the right choices.
Yeah.
So much of what we're saying, by the way, is off the cuff and we're kind of going, this might be a solution. it's about being very specific and working out where everything is, getting the full knowledge and then making decisions based on that knowledge, which I think is a theme that we've repeated throughout this podcast.
Yeah, and thinking one step ahead, right? So like an app versus the paper, we can recycle the paper, what happens to the app, right? So that
exactly.
It's just lots of different things like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, buying if you're buying new tech, what are you going to do with the old one? There are lots of charities that take them and give them to either charities or people who are digitally excluded. There's a national device bank you can give them to. It's all very interesting. Yeah. There's a lot there. But yeah, just always think, well, don't just think about that. But it's like Josie said, it's not magic. So just think about the physical implications of everything. And yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely. Really helps.
That's a really good point, I think. Yeah. Physical, because I lose sight of that.
Yeah, it's easy to, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
AI
yes.
is an interesting one, just on that. Because that seems so magic, but there is a lot of, it's a huge environmental aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, when you think about it, but at the time you go, it's producing content, threatening my livelihood.
Yeah.
but obviously there's a huge physical toil? Yeah, toil.
On that, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then for obviously many of our charities that are listening out there that have charity shops, secondhand is also the way to go,
exactly.
Because buying recycled clothes, especially as we know the heavy impact in water, actually, that producing a new piece of clothing is having, is always a good idea to visit charity shops or from a charity perspective. To think about ways they can collect unwanted clothing item, because that's a very big part of how they can tackle climate change at their size and at their height, and obviously using tech to be present online so more people are aware of all the products that your charity shop is selling, and you're playing way more a bigger role in climate change than you think of. I think on that note, it's time to wrap up. Thank you very much to all the three of you.
Thank you.
For a great conversation. And thank you very much to all of you for listening. We hope that our conversation today has given you some inspiration and direction in how to use tech with the environment front of mind, and how to start thinking about some strategy and some plans to put that into motion in your organization. Next podcast is another exciting one, because as part of our climate action campaign, we're going to have a discussion how to actually campaign for the climate. So please check back in a couple of weeks' time when we're going to do that. And in the meantime, we hope that you have a lovely week, and keep on checking our content at charitydigital.org.uk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.